This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets now and in the future. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we look ahead to the final 3 months of the year. We analyse the data surrounding COVID, sorting the facts from the fake news.
Some people are saying that's because the virus has become less dangerous, and that's not true. We see no evidence that that's the case.
Where the threat to the global recovery looms largest.
The virus has been spreading once again through Europe, so we could see some additional downgrades to those parts of the world.
And the valuation challenges facing stock market investors.
Of the five markets, five valuation metrics, so 25 in total, 18 of them, of 18 of those 25 are currently expensive. 11 are very expensive.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Amazingly, we are in the final quarter of an already eventful 2020. I know it's gone quick, right? And there's still 3 months to go. With COVID-19 not going away, the US election in November, and the UK's exit from the European Union in December, to name but three massive events we already know about, it could still be yet a rollercoaster ride to the end of 2020 for investors. So I thought it'd be a good time to sit down with three Schroders experts to provide some guidance as to what we can expect heading into the end of the year. We discuss the outlook for stock markets and which ones look cheap with Duncan Lamont, Schroders Head of Research and Analytics. We talk about the state of the global economy and which countries look best placed to ride the COVID wave and political uncertainty with Azad Zangana, Senior European Economist and Strategist. But first, I wanted to drop in with Mark Ainsworth, Schroders Head of Data Insights. We've not heard from him since the start of the pandemic. He's been busy trawling through mountains of data related to the virus, which is helping inform investment decisions. But I want to know what data he was looking at and, from a neutral perspective without any political or market bias, what it's telling us. So grab a drink and strap yourselves in.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
First up, I wanted Mark's help to make some sense of the data we're seeing in terms of the new wave of the virus in Europe.
So I think when it comes to making sense of the data on this new wave, I think there are three important numbers to look at. They're cases, hospital admissions, and mortality. So in terms of cases, things sound really bad. The numbers of cases reported each week in the UK, in France, in Spain have now exceeded the highs of the peak in spring. But it's very different now. In those early stages, very many people who got infected weren't being counted in the cases. Whereas this time round, there's a lot more testing capacity, a lot more people are counted. So that does change the dynamic. Things aren't as bad as it looks from those case numbers. Nevertheless, there are two other key numbers that we can look at to really understand how severe this situation is from a public health point of view. And of course, if it's clear that there's danger to the population, then governments will then act to kind of control things. So on hospital admissions, things are definitely heading in the bad direction. So France, the most recent week, they have had twice as many people admitted to hospital with COVID as just 2 weeks earlier. But still, so far, only about one-tenth the level it was in April. And it's similar in the UK, where at the start of September, only about 360 people were being admitted each week with COVID, whereas in the most recent week, it's almost 2,000. So that's five times higher than it was only at the beginning of the month. But nevertheless, the peak back in spring was 20,000. So it's still not nearly that bad. And in Spain, it's a similar sort of story. And in fact, in the last couple of weeks, they've had some significant drops in admissions because the lockdowns they've been putting in place have been having an effect. So things don't look like they're going to get nearly as bad as they were. And on the third number, the key one is the number of people who've died. This is, again, it's not nearly as bad as it was. Some people are saying that's because the virus has become less dangerous, and that's not true. We see no evidence that that's the case. It is true that hospitals are better at treating this. There are drugs now that people know to give, like steroids. People know to treat people better with oxygen rather than ventilators. But the key thing really is that it's just so much more dangerous to older people than younger people. So the evidence is now clear that every 6 years older you are, the risk of dying from this virus doubles. So if you're aged 85, there's a 15% risk of death. But if you're younger, it's almost nothing. So the mix of people getting it now is very different. And I guess the older parts of the population understand how dangerous it is and are generally shielding themselves from infection. And that does mean the overall number of people are likely to die is much less bad than that first time round. But it still depends on people taking action to sort of stop it getting bad.
The press, certainly in the UK, has been awash with images of people not complying with the lockdown rules. But what is the data telling us?
So I'm sure there are lots of people not doing what they're told, but we also see clear evidence that people are reacting to those local lockdowns. So just to give one example, in Bolton, which is a real hotspot at the moment, in the data we can see a very clear reduction in the number of people going to shops. And that's one of those sort of discretionary activities that you would expect people to be doing less of. But we actually, at the same time, we still see people going to work. So it is clear that people are changing the behaviours that are risky, but still trying to keep economic activity going. I think the key risk is people mixing between households and in very large groups. And actually, it's very hard for us to see that in the data. It's, you know, whether you're mixing, going to the restaurant just with your family or with a load of other people is very hard for us to see. But generally speaking, there is clear evidence that people are doing the right thing.
However, Ainsworth says with winter approaching, lockdowns in some form are something Northern Hemisphere countries may have to expect. He says his team's research firmly supports the view that the virus transmits more easily on cold air and with people cooped up indoors. But there is some good news on the horizon.
On the vaccines front, there are now many vaccines that are at the final stages of their testing, and it will become clear very soon how safe they are, how effective they are. And so it's very clear there will be an effective vaccine very soon available. It'll be starting to be deployed to the general populations next year. And so that will be improving things. And so it's very unlikely that we'll have this sort of situation next winter.
So the metaphorical groundhog is telling us to expect six more months of winter. Not sure what Bill Murray would make of that, but having discussed the data, in the next section of the show, we're going to chat about what it means for the outlook for the global economy with Azad Zangana.
Get in touch with us by email at shorterspodcasts@shorters.com or visit our website, shorters.com/investor download.
Global growth has taken a battering during the pandemic as countries went into lockdown and businesses were forced to close. However, the economy has bounced back stronger than expected, leading Schroders Economics team to upgrade their 2020 growth forecast to -4.6% from -5.4%. So still tough, but I wanted to know which economies look in better shape than others.
So far, the data does suggest that parts of the US appear to be stronger than expected. And so I guess the forecast for the US could be revised a little bit higher up. But we're seeing more local lockdowns being applied in countries like France and Spain. The virus has been spreading once again through Europe, and even the UK is seeing increased lockdowns there too. So we could see some additional downgrades to those parts of the world. Otherwise, largely as expected, we've seen quite a strong recovery come through in the second quarter and most of the third quarter, but leading indicators are now starting to lose momentum. As I mentioned, this is expected. We have seen, I suppose, the easiest parts of the rebound come through. And now the final 10 to 20% of the fallen GDP will take longer because social distancing restrictions are still in place. Some businesses are struggling to operate. And of course, households and businesses in general have remained cautious. And so spending levels are lower than normal. But otherwise, the recovery is progressing reasonably well.
The US could be in line for a small upgrade to forecast, but what has the US done differently to most of the West, Europe in particular?
So it's more the management of the virus compared to our previous expectations. The scale of the lockdowns there have generally been smaller and shorter than anticipated. We are waiting for another fiscal package to come through to help continue to provide support to the household sector. That's sort of been complicated a little bit by what's happening with the Supreme Court at the minute and the nomination for a new judge. But there is still the expectation that a new fiscal package can be put together in time.
Economists have been looking to China as some sort of guide for how the economic recovery is playing out, being the first country into lockdown and one of the first out. So what are we learning from China's recovery?
So the economy had a good run in terms of its recovery and has since then lost its momentum, as we're now seeing in other parts of the world. When we look at the breakdown of the economy, we found that the areas that have received the largest stimulus are the ones that have been performing well. So, for example, industrial production and exports. But the domestic side of the economy seems to be much more cautious. So household spending, for example, is still just about negative year on year. Imports as well are also still negative year on year. And that tells us that households, although they have obviously raised their level of spending, it's still a cautious environment where online sales are doing well, but in-store sales are not. We're seeing a rebound in mobility data, for example, on the roads, and traffic congestion on roads has increased quite dramatically. But usage of public transport is still below the normal levels. So that level of caution, I think, is likely to carry on. And we will probably see the same caution in other parts of the world as well when we get to that stage.
Sangana says concentrating on breaking the chain that links the virus between groups of people and avoiding full lockdown is key to keeping the recovery going. However, there are concerns around countries such as Spain, France, and most recently the UK. The UK in particular has been hit hard. Its GDP, the measure by which we can see whether an economy expands or contracts, fell by more than 20% at the peak of the lockdown. What are the indicators telling us about the UK recovery?
So we've only had data coming through to July now. In the UK, we get monthly GDP figures, unlike most of the rest of the world. And we've already seen 70% of the fall in GDP being recovered. Now, we know August is going to be a very strong month because the government introduced the Eat Out to Help Out scheme, which encouraged households to go out and eat in restaurants with a government subsidy. That proved to be very popular, so I fully expect that sector to boost GDP quite strongly through August. And then in September, we had a return to schools and universities and a lot of public administration as well returning to work. So again, September should be a reasonably good month. But I think as we get into the final quarter of the year, you should expect to see a slowdown in the growth rate. So we're likely to see double-digit growth in Q3 and then low single-digit growth in the fourth quarter. That loss of momentum is by no means a disaster. It just reflects the cautious nature of behavior of households and businesses. And then depending on the extent of the local lockdowns that we get in the coming months, we could see a bit more of a slowdown coming through if those lockdowns are extended to the workplace especially.
And let's not forget Brexit. Britain's exit from the European Union had dropped out of the headlines as the pandemic took hold, but a deal with the European Union needs to be done by December 31st to avoid a no-deal Brexit. That's something which commentators say could be disastrous for an economy already hit hard by COVID-19. So how likely is a deal by the end of the year?
So we're still expecting a trade deal to be done, although this trade deal is unlikely to cover all sectors that take part in trade between the UK and Europe. Some sectors will be excluded. They just won't be able to reach agreement on them. The services, for example, are unlikely to be covered by the agreement. I think for the government, the priority is to say that Brexit is finished and they've delivered on their promise, which means all they need to do is get some kind of trade deal agreed. It doesn't have to be a particularly good one. Despite the increased rhetoric and increased pressure on both sides with threats of backing out of the original withdrawal agreement, both sides are still talking. And I think that's a really important sign that progress is probably being made.
So we know what the data is telling us in terms of the spread of the virus and how serious the second wave could be. We also know what to expect in terms of the global economic recovery. So in the final part of the show, we'll look at which stock markets look cheap with Duncan Lamont. So the virus isn't going away, we know that. The economic recovery is improving, but still weak. Against that backdrop, with countries still going through lockdowns, company earnings are also struggling. Yet stock markets, which wallowed in a pit of misery in March, have rallied. The US stock market, for instance, is up 55% from its 2020 low. Duncan Lamont provides a quarterly update on which stock markets look cheap based on five different stock markets: the UK, US, Japan, Europe ex-UK, and emerging markets. It's based on five valuation metrics, which you can find out more about if you search which stock markets look cheap. Duncan says the valuations now are almost the polar opposite to what they were in March.
Back in March, when I did this analysis, it was a lovely field of green. Every market you looked at, on just about every valuation measure you care to think about, was saying this looks like a really good opportunity. Remember, there was lots of risk out there, so it was hard to actually, for lots of people to act on that, but the valuations themselves, which can be a useful anchor, actually were quite positive. The unfortunate reality today, however, is that it's more like someone spilt a glass of dark red wine all over my valuation table. Almost all of these valuation metrics are now in pretty expensive territory. So of the five markets, five valuation metrics, so 25 in total, 18 of them, of 18 of those 25 are currently expensive. 11 are very expensive, meaning more than 20% more expensive than their average of the past 15 years. So it's not a great picture, I have to be honest, if you're just thinking about things from a valuation perspective.
Bumper valuations then, but which stock markets are looking more expensive than others?
So the standout expensive market is the US. And the important caveat to this has been the case for years. This is not a new development this year, but it has accelerated and has strengthened even further. So the US stock market, on all of the measures we care to look at, is screaming expensive. But as I said, it's looked relatively expensive for some time. However, it has also continued to be one of the best performing stock markets in the world. So this is one of the challenges when thinking about valuations in isolation. Some things, like the old Stella Artois adverts, are reassuringly expensive. So the US is expensive, but actually it's where growth has been strongest. It's where some of the particular technology companies that have benefited from the work from home, the more remote, the more online environment that we find ourselves in, there a lot of those are located there. So some of these companies have their price have been driven up very high, but it's actually because they've been performing very well. If we actually look at some of these US multiples in perspective, they are at levels which we have not seen since the dot-com crisis, and which we didn't see before the dot-com crisis either. So they are at levels which would ordinarily be given some warning signs. The difference compared with, say, the dot-com crash is actually a lot of these companies are very profitable. Back in like 2000, lots of these companies that were on crazy valuations were not earning anything. These companies today actually are generating quite a lot of earnings, quite a lot of cash flow. So it is actually quite a different situation than we saw back then. When we look elsewhere, it's a bit more mixed. There's no market that's really standing out and saying, yes, this looks really cheap right now. There's pockets of value. So you could say, if you look at the UK, the trailing price earnings multiple, so that's where the price is compared with the earnings of the last 12 months, it's on the cheap side. Similarly, it's cyclically adjusted. Price earnings multiple is also on the cheap side. But you've got to remember, the UK stock market has a lot of exposure to the oil price. So some of that cheapness is partly justified because expectations for earnings growth for those companies in the years to come are actually pretty poor. So it's hard to say anything looks good value right now if you're thinking about equities in isolation.
Valuations are clearly high everywhere. So does that mean stocks will fall?
So it's a bit tricky here. So I would say valuations, such as the ones we've been talking about here, they can be a useful indicator when you're thinking about long-term returns. And by long-term, I mean 5, 10, 20-year returns. They are completely and utterly useless at giving you any indication about what is going to happen in the near term. And by near term, I'm probably talking up to 3 years, maybe even 5 years. They're not going to be that helpful in telling you what's going to happen. So they are pointing towards, rather than negative returns for equities, I would say it's more low returns. So we've had a huge run and markets have effectively brought forward some of the returns that you might have expected to earn over the coming years. And they've basically been squashed into the last 6 months. So you've kind of had that cake already and there's less of it for future. So I think that what this is telling us is that equity markets or stock markets are set up right now for a period of below par, below kind of average returns. What counts in their favour is the fact that we do still have central banks who are still very accommodative regarding monetary policy. And we also have governments around the world that are implementing measures to try to support economies as well. So we have a kind of monetary policy and fiscal policy kind of pedal to the metal on both of those at present, which does actually underpin stocks to an extent, even accepting the fact they're expensive. So they're kind of not great, but not completely awful place at the moment. And to be honest, that's one important consideration here that we haven't spoken about is, yes, stocks may look expensive, but so does everything else. You look at cash, you're getting next to 0%. Government bond yields, you're getting next to 0% as well. So everything, unfortunately, looks expensive and people have to put their money somewhere. And actually, when you think about stocks in a relative value sense, so how expensive or cheap do they look compared with assets like bonds or cash? Actually, they look okay value. So expensive, just if you look at them in a kind of vacuum, but when you think about the broader investment universe, actually they don't look too bad at all. It's given rise to what people have described as the TINA trade. There is no alternative.
We haven't even mentioned inflation either, the rising costs of goods, which also erodes the value of cash or other assets that yield less than inflation. So it seems like a case of finding the needle in the haystack, but how might investors react?
It would take a very brave investor to avoid the US completely, given the uncertainties we're facing. Other markets look cheaper relative to the US, but again, they've all got issues of their own to resolve. So I would suggest spreading your risk across a number of markets and also using this as an opportunity to take stock about how much risk you want to be taking within your portfolio. So equities are risky. They will be expected to deliver better longer term returns than other asset classes, but they do come with the risk that you could lose money in the short term as well. So reassessing what are you investing for, what are you hoping to achieve, and what is the right balance of assets and risk that will enable you to do that. That would be the most sensible strategy, not just now, but at all points in time, to be honest.
You can read more in the latest update of Which Stock Markets Look Cheap when it's published the week beginning October 5th on schroders.com/insights. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything in the show or have any ideas for future shows, contact us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. You can read more from Mark Azad and Duncan at schroders.com/insights. To listen to more from the Investor Download, go to schroders.com/the Investor Download or rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all else, keep safe and go well. Cheers.